Ms. Morton, counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning. It is an ancient doctrine of both the common law and our Constitution that a defendant cannot be held to answer a charge not contained in the indictment brought against him. It is problematic for a service court to find a providency inadequate and affirm a conviction for a completely separate offense under the code, and therefore notice is given to an appellant for the first time on appeal. The closely related offense doctrine is in direct contradiction of the notice requirement of the Due Process Clause. The principle of fair notice mandates that an accused has a right to know to what offense and under what legal theory he will be convicted. Fair notice lies at the heart of a plea inquiry.
Sounds like you're quoting from Medina. Is it your position that it's the principles of law in Medina that are applicable here? Because the government's arguing that that was an LAO case and it doesn't apply here, but it's your view that the same principles are applicable, is it?
Your Honor, it is the appellant's view that the same principle in Medina and Miller are applicable because the heart of those cases goes to notice and
in which, whether notice was given. Which aspect of the Medina line of cases and or which principle of law is the critical one here for you, or is it a collection? For example, is it the issue of notice? Is it the issue of theory presented to the finder of fact, etc.?
Your Honor, it's the theory of notice.
Do you think that this would be the same case or a different case if the elements had been explained in the course of the providence inquiry to the accused, the elements of, to which the elements of the offense, a false official statement, as opposed to distinguished? Do you understand what I'm getting at? I mean, I understand the Medina line of cases, but there's also Mason and O'Connor, and also within Medina itself, that suggested if it had been properly explained and he had acknowledged that he understood and had and was guilty of those aspects of the offense, that we could nonetheless affirm. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor, I think it would be a different case, but I do think that notice should be given in the charge sheet, and that it's not the place for an accused to get notice during the providency inquiry, because in order for a plea to be knowing and voluntary, that is a decision that's made based off of what an
appellant. So the appellant can't then decide to agree to plead to something else? Isn't that the whole point of the care inquiry? An appellant can't voluntarily plead to another offense in the course of a dialogue with the judge?
An appellant can agree to plead to something else during the providency inquiry, but the record must make clear, and it's hard to distinguish whether an appellant actually understands what it is that they're pleading to during that when they haven't had enough time necessarily to break the record to discuss with their counsel the implications of pleading to something
else. But provided that it's knowing and voluntary, they can plead to something in a care inquiry that wasn't charged. True or false?
As long as it's knowing and voluntary, I'm sure.
In a case like this, where leaving aside the closely related doctrine, the actual elements are so close, they're not exactly the same, but they are very, very close. We're not dealing with LIOs here. We're dealing with 107 and 123. And if you stack the elements of the two next to each other, they're extremely close. Given that in the STIP, and it would appear in the care inquiry, the accused actually admitted the elements of 107 while pleading to 123. Isn't that enough, or does the judge need to say something on the order of, now remember, you're pleading to 123, but 107 is lurking in there?
I think the military judge actually, Your Honor, does need to specifically say, you know, that 107 could be something based off of her providence inquiry that she could be convicted of, thereby putting the appellant on notice, therefore so it can be a knowing
involuntary. Is that the judge's duty or counsel's duty or whose?
Your Honor, it's the military judge's duty.
Okay.
And didn't the judge say just the opposite in this case? Or
The military judge specifically did say regarding two of the elements, the intent to deceive and intent to defraud, told the appellant for the Sixthly forgeries that they were different and reminded her that they were different.
Is defraud a subset of deceive?
According to United States versus Hardshaw, it is.
If you have an intent to defraud, do you necessarily have an intent to deceive?
You can, yes. Okay. Well, misrepresentation.
Not, the other isn't necessarily yes. The case. The deceives a bigger universe, but what I'm saying is defraud wholly included within deceive? Thank you.
But the officiality of the elements are different. I know that doesn't go to your question, but again, we don't have the officiality here, even though those might be a subset and we don't have the notice. The charge sheet nor the appellant's providence inquiry puts appellant on notice of an Article 107 offense, specifically the officiality element. As this court stated in both Medina and Miller, the Constitution requires an accused to be on notice as to the offense that must be defended against. A conviction on a charge can't be upheld if it wasn't charged on the charge sheet nor presented to a panel at trial, because to do so offends the basic notice of due process. This court in United States versus Elman refused to apply the closely related offense doctrine because the military judge didn't advise the appellant of an alternate theory, nor did the appellant articulate an understanding as to an alternate theory. If this court believes the closely related offense doctrine is good law, the Army Corps still erred in this case. Appellant's charge sheet, providency inquiry, nor stip of fact established she was on notice of the required elements of Article 107. This court in United States versus SAP looked at the following factors to decide if closely related was applicable. Had the appellant been placed on notice? Had the appellant admitted all the elements? Is the offense closely related? Notice should be established from the charge sheet. It is imperative that notice be established at this point in order to ensure that a plea is truly knowing and voluntary. In this case, notice is not given in the charge sheet, nor is it evident appellant was on notice during the providency inquiry. Appellant might have admitted elements to false official statement, but she didn't know she was admitting them for the purpose of a conviction under Article 107. Like in Medina, clear, the elements might have been met, but the context of Article 107, in order for the plea to be knowing and voluntary, was not met. The case law doesn't make it clear exactly what the concept of closely related is, but if the elements test is used, Article 107 is not a subset of Article 123, as appellant was not provident to the official nature of the document.
Is it your initial position that the closely related offense doctrine does not survive Medina?
It is my position that it should not survive, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
When comparing elements of two offenses reveals an offense is not necessarily a lesser included offense of the other, the requirement notice to an accused may be met if the charge sheet makes the accused aware of any alternate theory. Nothing in the record of trial indicates a discussion of false official statement for the six slips. An apparent was not specifically put on notice by the military judge that the elements of intent to deceive and intent to defraud, she was told that they were different. What is clear from this case is that the first time appellant was put on notice was by the Army Court, and it is not how notice is supposed to work in the due process clause. Subject to your questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Captain Nicole Fish, and I, along with Colonel Norman Allen, represent the United States in this matter. In this case, the Army Court of Criminal Appeals properly exercised its authority in amending and affirming a false official statement. The Army Court applied the closely related offense doctrine and determined that appellant was on notice and that she could be convicted under Article 107 because the elements are substantially the same with only a minor technical variance. Article 107 is closely related to Article 123 in this case for two reasons. One, the specification contains the allegation of a false official statement, and two, the elements are substantially the same. The Army Court's decision that this was a closely related offense is a question of law review de novo.
Now, in your brief, you expressly disavow that Medina has anything useful to say about this case. Those aren't your words, but, you know, there's no relevant guidance in these cases because their focus is solely on lesser-included offenses. But one of the principles in the Medina case was that an accused has the right to know what they're pleading guilty to. And in this case, the accused didn't know what they're pleading guilty to because the Army's criminal appellate court decided that later on. How does that jive with Medina?
Your Honor, the fact
that it was an LAO case doesn't mean the principle of law isn't applicable elsewhere.
Yes, Your Honor. The focus of Medina was for lesser-included offenses. However, even with closely related offenses, you are required to have notice. And in this case, the specification as alleged and those elements, along with the doctrine of the closely related offense, as from Epson Felty, equates to that being the notice that appellant did have that she could be.
Did the military judge in this case tell the appellant they weren't the same?
The military judge in the case talked about intent to defraud and intent to deceive.
Right, and said they're different. So how does that put the appellant on notice that she's actually pleading guilty to both, unknown to the appellant? See what the CCA does.
Well, Your Honor, based on the elements test from, you could look at that elements test from Schmuck, and in looking at that, you have to look at both the specification as alleged and the statutory elements. And when you look at both of those, it demonstrates that that appellant was on notice of a false official statement.
What is the judge supposed to do in a case like this? I obviously think he did enough. He does not have to draw the accused's attention to the fact that lurking in there is 107.
No, Your Honor. In this case, appellant was trying to plead guilty to a forgery charge.
To 123, right.
Yes, Your Honor. And in doing so, she pled guilty to that, the lesser-included or closely related offense.
Well, it's not a lesser-included offense. Go look at the manual.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But with a closely related offense, it is based on that specification. What it says puts her on notice of the 123.
What
was 107, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. Judge Ryan.
What part of the UCMJ are you relying on to support this closely related offense doctrine?
Your Honor, the closely related offense doctrine came from case law under United States versus Felty, which established that it didn't materially prejudice an appellant if it was a guilty plea, if the gravamen was identical, and if there was the same maximum punishment.
And where did that rationale come from in those cases?
There's no definitive explanation as to where it derived from.
Are you aware of any other jurisdiction, state or federal, that has adopted this doctrine?
Not in this sense. The federal closely related offense doctrine is more in relevance to warrants and determining probable cause and whether or not it was relevant in that sense.
For 42-1983 actions to determine whether or not agents can be held liable. But are you aware of any use of this doctrine in this context as
no,
a substitute? Thank you.
Counsel, at trial, appellant faced a charge under Article 123, and now the charge of which he stands convicted, based upon the decision of the CCA, is under Article 107. Now, if this happened at trial, wouldn't it have to follow Rule 603, changes to charges and specifications?
Determining whether it was minor or...
Just making a change to a charge or specification. You have to actually make the change, and then there has to be a determination whether it's minor or major.
Yes, Your Honor.
And is this a minor or a major charge? Change in the charges.
Well, Your Honor, the closely related offense doctrine, I don't think that it is relevant in that sense, Your Honor, after the findings have been made. An appellate court also has the ability, which is not the same, but they have the ability to affirm lesser-included offenses. And if the appellant is...
Doesn't that come directly from Article 79? there's express authority in both the statute and the manual for courts martial for that to take place. The previous question asked, where's the authority for the closely related offense doctrine? And my question is a variation of that, and that is, we do have authority for changing charges and specifications in the manual, and in, why don't we look upon that as the source of the authority when it's not a lesser included offense?
I think you can look at that, Your Honor. I think you can also make a comparison to Article 79 and the fact that Article 79 does allow an element that was not proven at trial for the offense charged based on the specification as it's alleged. And I think, and in making notice...
Isn't that expressly in the manual for courts martial in Part 4 under the discussion of lesser included offenses? And it dates back to 1951. When the UCMJ was adopted, the manual has expressly allowed for the specification to set forth the facts of a lesser-included offense?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where's the authority for the closely related offense doctrine?
The authority for the closely related offense doctrine, it can be applied, I think, can be analogized to that section of Article 79. It is not specified in the cases that that is where it is analogized to, but based on United States versus Medina and Miller, the idea of notice, because both of those cases were pre-United States versus Smuck, and which elucidated that you need to also look at the elements, and if a appellant has been put on notice of both the, based on the specification as alleged and the statutory elements, which in this case they have.
Arnold, is your view is that the specification here is sufficient, then why isn't it a lesser included offense and the closely related offense doctrine doesn't apply at all?
The closely related offense doctrine applies in this case because it does satisfy under both absentee as well as in addition to. And in this case, it could feasibly be possibly a lesser included offense, which the Army Court does not base its opinion on that, but it does mention that it might be possible.
And where in the specifications as charged are the descriptions of either officiality or the deception element? In other words, where in the charge would the accused be put on notice of the elements of Article 107?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant is put on notice for Article 107 based on the specification as it's alleged. If you start with the actual specification that was given, it says that, I'm summarizing, that PFC Makisha Morton, U.S. Army did at or near Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, on or about 4 January 2006, with the intent to defraud, falsely alter a certain DD Form 689, dated 1406, and the following words and figures, to wit, altering the time authorized for quarters in the remarks section of the form from an uncertain number to 7, which said DD Form 689, if genuine, would apparently operate to the legal harm of another.
Right, we've got that on Joint Appendix page 4 now. Now,
yes.
How does that put someone on notice of the elements of Article 107?
Yes, Your Honor. Starting at the beginning, it says it's with the intent to defraud. For a false official statement, you need that the false statement was made with the intent to deceive. And under U.S. v. Hartsaw, this court found that the intent to defraud, intent to deceive, is necessarily included in the intent to defraud.
And what do you do about the fact that the military judge expressly told the appellant in this case that they were not the same thing?
Your Honor, the military judge, in explaining intent to defraud, said that intent to defraud and intent to deceive were different. But in those explanations, if you read through the explanations on Joint Appendix 18, which is page 42 of the record, that definition, it actually confirms what Hartsaw said, in that intent to deceive is within intent to defraud, because intent to deceive is to misrepresent. And intent to defraud is to misrepresent to the benefit or use of your own or another person's benefit.
So my underlying question here is, why do we need the closely related offense doctrine if the government believes this is a lesser included offense?
Your Honor, the closely related offense doctrine, or alternatively, the lesser included, could be applied in this case. But the closely related offense doctrine is what the Army Court determined in this case, and it is applicable in that sense
This is not to fault the Army Court, because there were case law out there from our court describing that. whether it properly applied in this case is another matter. But looking at the underlying doctrine of the closely related offense and the questions as where it came from, I'm going back to Rule 603, which talks about how you make changes in charges and specifications. The appellate court has made a change in a charge and a specification here. If they, it's not a lesser included offense. If they make that change, don't they have to follow Rule 603? Where do they get the independent authority, other than the case law, to do that?
If they've made the changes at trial, then, Your Honor, yes, you have to follow if it was a major change versus a minor technical variance.
And why wouldn't this be a major change in this case?
This would be... It doesn't fall under that in that it's 603 because appellant is on notice that it is a closely related offense doctrine, so you don't need to look at it in that respect.
But I think what the Chief Judge is saying is if at trial for them to make the change from 123 to 107, they would need to follow 603 and either have the accused say, I don't have a problem with it and I don't mind you making the change, or I do have a problem with you making the change, and then they have to go through the major minor change analysis. Why should the appellate court on appeal be able to make a change without getting any input from the accused at all?
Well, that falls under that the absconding in that this was a guilty plea. She was trying to plead guilty. The gravamen is identical. Whether or not she presented the false six slip on two occasions and presented it to her chain of command in order to get seven unauthorized days. Whatever way you look at it, that information remains the same. The gravamen is identical to what she's pleading guilty, and she gets that benefit based on her guilty plea. The maximum punishment for both are also the same. They're both at 5 years.
Well, in this case, the government charged an offense in a way that ensured that it could not be affirmed on appeal because it wasn't the proper object of a forgery, right?
The forgery, yes, Your Honor.
The six slip. So who should bear the burden of that? Who should bear the brunt of that mistake? The government, the military judge, or the accused?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, because she is on notice.
Well, you're assuming that she's on notice. That's the question.
She's on notice of what? That there is such a thing as a closely related offense doctrine, or that this is a closely related offense?
Your Honor, that... This is a closely related offense because based on the specification as it was alleged and the elements, she was on notice. If we continue through that specification, the next step after intent to defraud was falsely alter certain DD Form 689, which is not at issue. The two elements that needs of a false official statement is that the statement was false in certain particulars and that the accused knew it to be false at the time she made that statement.
Are there any other closely related offenses set forth in the specification?
No, Your Honor. In this case, it's based on the facts in this case, and it's taken in a case-by-case basis. The forgery results in a 107 as being closely related.
But that isn't that the question? How does a person know what the government may later argue is a closely related offense in any particular charge?
Well, in the military, the specification is made factually specific in the allegations, and thus when you look at the specification as alleged, you may also be on notice of another charge, and in this case, the closely related offense of Article 107.
So under that theory, any time the government makes a charge, they're not only charging the stated offense, they are also including within that offense anything that could be considered a closely related offense.
If it's a guilty plea, Your Honor. Closely related offense only applies for guilty pleas.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I mean, why wouldn't it be able to apply to not guilty pleas?
Well, Your Honor, the court has limited it to guilty pleas, and the government's not asking to expound on that.
Go ahead. Finish your answer, Judge Rye.
Well, during a guilty plea, an appellant is pleading guilty
to a charge and a specification they're under.
And they're gaining a benefit for that. They're pleading guilty to what they've pled guilty to of the facts that they believe. And in this case, that gravamen is that false, also is a false official statement.
Are you familiar with the Thompson case in 2009?
Yes, Your Honor.
And can you explain how that case fits in with your argument? It appears there that this court then applied a elements analysis to what the CCA found was a closely related offense.
Yes, Your Honor. In Thompson, they found the original charge was for kidnapping, and they found reckless endangerment, the CCA did.
Do we know if that was a guilty plea?
It was not, Your Honor. The actual kidnapping was not a guilty plea, which is one of the major differences. But in addition, there is elements that are not, cannot be found in that specification. They have totally different elements. Whereas here, the final element, that the accused made a certain official statement.
So we should go to the elements test in closely related offense doctrine?
Your Honor, Epson Felty was pre-United States versus Schmuck. And since then, case law, to include Thompson, which was not a guilty plea, but also U.S. v. Bivens, which was cited in United States versus Sapp, does do a closely related offense. And in that case, they actually go through both Epps Felty as well as say the elements are also similar. And in doing so, in this case, it also is applicable if you do that elements test, you still will meet and have a closely related offense. Because of that, the last element is the false official statement. And making that official, certain official statement is met based on the fact that it was a DD Form 689 and it would apparently operate to the legal harm of another. The purpose of AR 40-66, which is the Army regulation that's applicable to the DD Form 689, is that its purpose is to be used as communication between the medical officer and the command in the unit. If absent that communication, there is no legal harm. Additionally, if you look to the aspect of intent to defraud as well, an intent to defraud is your intent to obtain through misrepresentation something of benefit to yourself. The only way that she gets the benefit of those unauthorized 7 days of quarters is if she gives that to her command.
Well, you're arguing that this should fall under the closely related offense doctrine, and I'm trying to figure out why we should continue the closely related offense doctrine. I mean, it doesn't appear that it is, I mean, it appears that it is a doctrine that is unique to the military. It was kind of made up of whole cloth in Felty in those cases. Other jurisdictions seems to get along without it just fine. We can use Rule 603 or 605 in those situations in the military. Why is it needed? It seems pretty ambiguous.
Your Honor, it's needed, and it's been clarified by U.S. v. Bivens in the sense that if there is not a lesser included offense, that there is, when the elements and the specification allege put that person, that appellant on notice, that there should be an avenue in order to amend that specification.
In the civilian world, do you know whether or not appellants or defendants are able to challenge their guilty pleas or the circumstances under which they're able to challenge their guilty pleas?
They can do the blank plea even whether they believe it or not, whereas in the military it is different where they have to admit to the elements and be provident of those.
But what I'm saying is, let's say that someone pleads guilty in the Eastern District of Virginia, okay? Can they come up to the Fourth Circuit and complain and say, my guilty plea was not provident because I pled guilty to forgery, but really what I wrote couldn't have been the object of a forgery? Can they do that? Or do you not know?
I'm not so sure.
Doesn't this get awfully close to appellate courts kind of imposing an Alford plea on the appellant? I mean, in a guilty plea case, that the defendant has admitted that they committed a certain crime and gone through the Providence inquiry. And then on appeal, the appellate court takes a look at it and says, no, that wasn't provident, but we're going to find you guilty of this other crime that you weren't charged of because what you have said supports that. And to me, that's kind of similar to what an appellate might have done had he been faced with those facts and if we allowed an Alford plea in military practice.
Well, I think, Your Honor, in this case, the facts of the guilty plea support what she did. With the specification as alleged, it put her on that notice. And thus, she was on notice for that guilty plea, for an Article 107. I see that I'm out of time. Unless there are any further questions, may I briefly continue?
Please do.
Based on the facts of this case, Article 123 and Article 107 UCMJ are closely related. Appellant was on notice of a false official statement based on the allegations in the specification and the statutory elements, because they are substantially the same. There's no risk of double jeopardy. Therefore, the Army Court did not err in this case in amending two specifications of Article 123 to Article 107 UCMJ.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Counsel, before you begin, can you answer, if you remember the question I asked the government about what would happen, what could happen in a civilian jurisdiction with respect to challenging a guilty plea on appeal in the way that it happened here? Do you understand my question? There's a pretrial agreement. The defendant gets the benefit of the pretrial agreement, and then they challenge on appeal the fact that what they pled guilty to couldn't really have been a crime. And therefore, it should be overturned, and that would be the end of it. Do you think that could happen in the Eastern District of Virginia if there hadn't been any intentional misleading or physical abuse causing them to enter into the guilty plea?
Your Honor, I don't think that they could do what was done in this case in the federal system. The closely related.
Why not? Why doesn't Rule 11 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure allow a defendant to challenge a guilty plea on appeal when the challenge is based on the assertion that the charge does not state an offense?
Maybe I misunderstood the question, or I am not super familiar with the federal system.
That's a good enough answer for now.
But it's not insane. What was done in this case, just inherently, I mean, obviously notice in the due process clause makes it not right, but just inherently as an attorney, that doesn't seem proper to me.
I think we have your answer on that question.
Can we re-examine the old Army holding that these slips can't be the subject of forgery? And that's an Army holding, and it's a very old one. And I don't think we've ever held that. We mentioned it in passing once recently, but those are Army Board of Review cases. Can we relook at that?
I believe you can, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you.
Counsel, with respect to the closely related offense doctrine, would it be appropriate to apply it in the situation in this case if the record were to establish that the military judge advised the accused of the facts pertaining to false official statement and said, in the end, well, I find your guilty plea provident as to Article 123. I want to put you on notice that you've also established the offense of Article 107, and do you have any objection if that were affirmed on appeal if the 123 is found improvident? Now, that's not the facts of this case, and I'm not suggesting that's necessarily required, but why would it be inappropriate to apply the closely related offense under those circumstances?
Your Honor, I think there has been a confusion in the appellate practice based off of what we call things, less included offense, close related. I think in the scenario, Your Honor, that you just gave, the elements test.
Not the elements test, notice. The judge simply said, I find you're provident as to 123, but I also find that what you've said would establish a different offense, Article 107. And do you understand that in making this provident plea, if 123 is thrown out on appeal, the appellate court could affirm a finding under 107? And the appellant, after consultation with counsel, said, I understand that and we have no objection. Would the closely offense-related doctrine permit, under those circumstances, an affirmance on appeal under 107?
As long as it was a truly knowing and voluntary plea.
Why is that a closely related doctrine case? Why isn't that just the person pleading guilty in the alternative? I understand this isn't your doing. Why isn't that just pleading to a different offense?
Well, if
why do you need the closely related doctrine in that context?
Just to clarify the hypothetical, there's no change amendment of the specification. The specification remains a 123 specification.
It wouldn't be a change if the military judge just gave notice that she could be convicted of false official and, again, went over the elements of false official. But the forgery, Your Honor, was what the military judge, in the end, in the scenario that Judge Ardman just gave me, was the conviction was forgery. It wasn't false official, so I don't know how it could be an alternate, because he didn't say, these are the elements of false official, I don't believe it's forgery, so therefore I'm going to find you guilty of false official statement.
I don't think that's the hypothetical.
Yeah, I think, well, why don't we dump this, since I think the hypothetical is not clear to me now, but it's not clear to me why you can't plead to something different than...
I'll restate the hypothetical. The hypothetical is that the individual is charged under Article 123. The individual pleads to Article 123, sets forth all the basis in the providence inquiry. The judge finds it to be provident. After finding it to be provident, the judge says, in the statements that you've made, you've also acknowledged guilt of another offense, Article 107. If on appeal, Article 123 is found to be improvident in this case, do you understand that under the closely related offense doctrine, the appellate court could affirm a finding under Article 107? Do you have any objection to that? And the accused says no, and assume that it's knowingly involuntary. Is there any reason why an appellate court could not affirm, under those circumstances, a closely related offense?
And the military judge specifically went over all of the false official statements.
That's right.
The accused to make sure she.
That's
understood.
Right. But there's no change to the finding specification, because the judge has found the individual to be provident as to 123. No one's asking for a change. The judge has identified a separate offense which the judge believes to be closely related, has provided the notice, and the individual has acknowledged that he or she is guilty of that offense and all the elements, and that there's the risk that it would be affirmed on appeal if 123 is found to be improvident.
As long as the appellant's been given fair notice and notice was given, then...
Does the providence of that plea depend on the closely related doctrine or the nature of the inquiry that the judge goes through?
The nature of the inquiry that the military judge goes over for the actual offense that was charged, Your Honor. I see that my time is
up. You may briefly conclude.
Thank you for your time. Have a good day.
Thank counsel, both parties, for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:15 a.m.
The last